also on Telepath, and he had no laboratory and had a lot for us to share with us. So,
thank you very much. It's an honor to be here. I'd like to acknowledge Steidman Shlita. And it's a big schuss to be able to share some Divrei Torah with you before the Yom Narayim. The topic that we were supposed to speak about this evening has to do with the mitzvah of shofar. And the mitzvah of shofar has a lot of very unique aspects to it that I'd like to bring out and share with you. The mitzvah of shofar is a mitzvah midoraisa. It's a mitzvah in the Chumash. At least the first day is a chovah doraisa to blow the shofar. Even though it's interesting to note, as has been pointed out, that a very simple point, that the word shofar never appears in Chumash in the context of Rosh Hashanah. Right? The word shofar in Chumash appears in the context of what? On Yom Kippur of Yovel. The Parshas Behar, in the Jubilee year, it says they blew a shofar and the Avodim went free. And the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah learns out from the Gezeirah Shava, Bechol Shashvi, that all the things we do in this seventh month of Tishrei are equated. Because Yom Teruah, Zichron Teruah says in the Chumash, but how? Maybe with chatzotzos, maybe with trumpets. How do we know with the shofar? That's learned out from Yom Kippur Shol Yovel. The Jubilee Leah, the 50th year on Yom Kippur, they blew the shofar, and that's when the Avadim went free. So, as we'll see, this is discussed in Sefer. What do we learn from that idea, that the word shofar doesn't even appear in the context of Rosh Hashanah? Now, as we know, this mitzvah is also a very interesting mitzvah in terms of the fact that, as far as the Torah is concerned, we only have to blow what's called nine kolos. A tekiah, a trua, a tekiah. Zehu. So from that 9 became 100. That's a big jump. That's, you stay in shul quite long on Rosh Hashanah. That's why, in many yeshivas, the minig is to make kiddush before shofar. Because everyone is in shul so long. When I went to Keren B'Yavne, we started. I went with Rabbi Steinman's son. We were together in Keren B'Yavne with David Steinman. He sat one row ahead of me, and we were in Keren B'Yavne together. We would start davening 6:30 in the morning, and we wouldn't finish till like 3:30 in the afternoon. So it makes sense that you should make Kiddush, because it's almost like Yom Kippur then, And this is a big discussion in the poskim, because really you're not supposed to eat before you do a mitzvah. You're not supposed to eat before you do a mitzvah, because you can forget to do the mitzvah. So that's why this became a whole big debate in the poskim, whether this is a proper thing to make kiddush before the blowing of the shofar. So in the yeshiva world, that became a given for obvious reasons. As we said, the davening is so long that they have to make kiddush. there was a great Rav in the Lower East Side. His name is Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin. He was the posek of New York, a posek of America, even before Moshe Feinstein. They overlapped, but he was considered the elder statesman. In other words, if Rav Moshe would want to ask, Rav Moshe would go to Rav Henkin, not the opposite. Understand? And he was the, and he had certain opinions on certain matters that he felt very strongly about. And one of the opinions that he had was that you can't, it's not right to make Kiddush before shofar blower. And he was very strong about that. And in fact, you know, the Ezra's Torah calendar is his calendar. They still have his Piskei Dinim on the calendar. And they still have. That Rav Henkin said that you shouldn't make Kiddush before davening because of this prohibition of eating before davening. Others disagree and say, like Rav Shechter pointed out, the other opinion is that the real Isser is to have a Suda, to have a meal before a mitzvah. But if you're just having a snack, which, depending upon, like Rav Shechter pointed out, depending upon what the Kiddush contains, maybe it's just what's called a te'ima ba'alma. You know, so then a te'ima, you know, a little piece of cake, not so big, a little tuna fish, or something like that, that could carry you through, and that would be okay. The Truma said, others disagree on that, but that was like a big machlokas of this idea. Yeah, in other words, you can make kiddush if you have one piece of cake, like a kazayis. Well, you see, that's going into another question. Most opinions hold that if you come to shul and you have kiddush, you should at least have some cake, cookies, mazonos, crackers, or a cup of wine. If you're making kiddush, then you have a second cup of wine. But to be kiddush for mokum suda, so you shouldn't just have tuna fish. Rav Moshe has a unique opinion. It's a kedai to point out. Rav Moshe Feinstein's opinion was that make kiddush and shul, you can have whatever you like. If all you like is just tuna fish, you can have tuna fish, provided that when you come home later, you have the meal, or you go elsewhere, you repeat the kiddush, and then you have the suda as well. But if you just want to have tuna fish, egg salad, so he permitted making kiddush and just having in that location to have that. It came, you know, where it came up. It comes up on on Pesach, because as the years progress in this world, so the non-gebruchs people become the more majority, and the gebruchs people become the minority. I mean, just see by what's available in the stores for Pesach. So I was a kid, you know, all these cookies that were with matzah meal, full. Now, you know, the different Pesach programs that people go on, it's like defined based on gebruchs, non-gebruchs, and that has all the social ramifications, etc. Because that's the world we live in. What can I tell you? You mean to have a lavish kiddush in shul? Well, have any kiddush in shul. So I'll tell you. Rav Shechter said from Rav Soloveitchik that he only wanted to be mako on having a kiddush in shul in the daytime, because in the daytime there's an opinion that you can really eat without Kiddush. So there is the opinion of the Gaonim that that the Zonus is sufficient. And then there's the opinion that you don't have to make so sort of like a Sfeik Sfeika. But at night, everyone agrees that you can't eat without Kiddush. At night, everyone agrees you can't eat without Kiddush. But you should know, there's a Rav someplace who asked me, this is the following question he had, that the people in his community weren't coming to shul on Friday night. So they figured, how do you get a Jew to come to shul? Food. So they started this thing, and I gave him permission to do so. To after the meal Friday night, they go to a side room and they have Kiddush, and they have like what we call a Shabbos day Kiddush Friday night, in order to get people to come, and it worked. People came. It's not necessarily the best thing to do, but I thought in his situation it would be okay. You know, every shul needs its thing to do. Okay. So the question number one we raised, that's the question of the Mordechai Brisk. There's no mention of the word shofar in the Torah when it comes to Rosh Hashanah. You have to learn it out from Yom Kippur Shel Yovel. What's the idea? And then there are many explanations given for what shofar represents, right? Rav Sadia Gaon has 10 explanations, So we'll try to explain it in a certain way tonight, and there are no shortage of other explanations that we'll give. But a lot of the Hasidic Sfarim, like the Shem Yishmuel, etc., they point out that that Rosh Hashanah is the day of creation, specifically the day of creation of Adam HaRishon. And the Torah says, Vayipach ba'apav nishmas Elohim, that Hashem blew into him a neshama. In other words, he made him ofar min ha'adama, and then Hashem blew into him a ruach memalala, a neshama. And every year on Rosh Hashanah, we're reliving that experience of being created anew, starting fresh. That's the Shalom HaKadosh says, the shofar, the first beginning of the sound is the tekiah, then the truah or whatever, and then the tekiah. So the Shalom explains, because in life we start out straight, but then sometimes we get choppy, we sometimes veer from the path. But we can always go back, and that's the second tekiah. Kadosh Baruch Hu also is Adam Yosher, Behem Bikshu Kishponos Rabim, and then we got a little choppy, and then we go back. So that's what Rosh Hashanah represents, the creation of mankind. That we're created, and every year we celebrate our creation. Every year is Vayipach Ba'apov. And we know the Maral says that Adam is Lashon Adama, because Adama is a mass of earth which you can plant and you can flourish, etc., or it can lay dormant. It can just be there without any soil, and it'll just, as Rav Yitzchak Cohen likes to point out, the pasuk in Mishlei. You look at the field, and you see just the thorns growing, and you look at it, and you get musa from it, because that's what could be with yourself. You can accomplish, you can create things in life, or you can just be dormant. and just let the thorns grow. So on Rosh Hashanah, every year, we have to have the accountability of what's going on in our lives. Are we living up to our potential? Adam is Lashon Adama. And Adam is, that means that each individual is a chafza of potential. That's what we are. And, you know, and we can live through life not actualizing our potential. That's what the Ramban says in Parshas Vayera. That what is the Nisayon? Nisayon, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu have to give us Nisayonis for? He knows whether we could pass them or not. Someone else might not know, but he knows. So what is he giving Avram a Nisayon? The answer is because he wants to bring a person Menakoach HaLapol. In other words, he wants a person to actualize his potential. Not just, oh, you have the potential, you really could do it. Let's see you actually actualizing that potential, and that's Adam. And that's what Rosh Hashanah is. Vayipach ba'apav. That blow into the person this Nishmas Elokim. And, you know, in life, we have so many excuses why we didn't do something. You know, there's a pasuk in Mishlei, Omar Otzel, the Otzel, the lazy person says, Ari Bachutz, meaning, I'm supposed to meet you today at a certain time. Why didn't I come? Because there's a lion outside my door, so I couldn't go out. Ari Bachutz. So the Telzer Rosh Shiva, a Mutl Katz, he once said, I don't understand. Is it a fabrication or is it not a fabrication? If it's a fabrication, he's not an otzel, he's just a liar. If it's not a fabrication, then maybe he has a good excuse. So he says, no, Avada, the Ari is there. But in life, if you really want to get something done, you'll figure out, even with the hardships in front of you, that you'll be able to do it. That's why he's an Otzel. Otzel says, okay, that's it. I don't have to work anymore. I have my excuse, etc. That's what Chasam Sofer says, that the first Al-Chait that we clap on Yom Kippur is al chet shechatanu l'fanecha ba'ones uveratzon. So ones, ratzon, I understand, I did an aveira willfully, but ones, so he says, because so Chasam Sofer says, well, some people have a ratzon for an ones. In other words, they didn't want to come to whatever function, but how does it look if they don't come? But if it's a snowstorm, now I have my excuse. Now I don't want to really come anyway, but now it's okay. And that's what we're clapping our case for. That's what the Mashkiach in Shimon Shkop's Yeshiva in Grodno said a beautiful word about the Akedah. He says, the Akedah, Vayivaka Atze Ola. He schlepped with him. Avram Avinu schlepped with him 3 days. They were walking, right? Two days, the third day they were there. His wood. That's not easy. To schlep with you, to carry with you wood for days on end. So why didn't they do the following? Just go to the site of the Akedah and get wood there, on the site. Why did they schlep? So the Mashkiach said like this, Shlomo Harkavi. That's all. He said, because no. If somebody doesn't really want to do something, so you know what he'll do? He won't take the wood, and he'll hope that by the time he gets to the site, there won't be any wood. And he said, oh, Potter! Potter Gavon! I did my best. There was no wood there. That's why I didn't do it. But if you really want to do it, you make sure that you'll bring the wood with you. And this way there won't be any excuses. And that's the idea of a person, the Adam, Menakoach HaLapol. That's why in Ne'ilah we say, at the end of Ne'ilah we say, Leman Nechtal Me'oshek Yadeinu. That we want to stop our Gezel, Oshek Yadeinu. So Rav Shach said over Rav Soloveitchik, why are we focusing on Gezel? So many different things. Why is Gezel the thing that we're focusing on at the end of Ne'ilah? Leman Nechtal Me'oshek Yadeinu. So Rav Soloveitchik said, no, we're not talking about the regular type of Gezel. We're talking about the fact that a Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us different gifts in life. Hands, feet, different things he gave us, and we're not using them for what he gave us. So we're like a Shol Shalomidas. In other words, I'm giving you something to use, and you're not using it. You're not using it properly. So it's a Shol Shalomidas. You're using it for something else. I gave you the eyes that you could read, learn, and using it for other things. So that's a shtickel gezel. Shol shalomidas. So that's what we're saying. That we say Kadosh Baruch Hu, we finally are doing tshuva on the ne'ilah, and now all the gifts that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us should be used in the proper way. So we won't be blamed that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us an aver, and we didn't use it in the proper way we used it for something improper, and hence we're considered borrowing something and using it for not the proper thing that we borrowed it for. So let's discuss now the original question of why is it that, you know, it's interesting, the shofar is very ambiguous. Truah, we blow truah, and then we're not sure what a truah is, the Gemara says. So we have to blow shvarim and shvarim truah and truah to make all the calculations, to be yotzi all the opinions. That's what the Gemara says. And the simple pshat could be that beforehand, maybe not everyone was yotzi, because some people just blew shvarims as the truah, some people just blew truahs. Some people blew shvarim truah. The Bahag says no, that all these ways of blowing shofar are valid ways. It's just what Rav Avohu made a takana that he wanted to have Klal Yisrael have uniformity. Even though we know there's so many differences in minhagim, which, you know, as long as it's done in the proper way, gives a lot of flavor to Klal Yisrael and a lot of spice to Klal Yisrael, as long as it's not within, you know, the question of Los Eskodzu, of doing it together. But as long as it's done in a proper way, the different menhagim could be a very positive thing. In fact, the shofar blowing is a whole discussion of how you get the 100 kolos, and there's the differences of opinion whether you blow in the silent Shmona Esrei on Musaf or not. I grew up in a shul where they blew in the silent Shmona Esrei. It was late Rabbi Berzon, who was the Rav of the shul, so he instituted we blow in the silent Shmona Esrei. I never liked it because I was always a slow davener, so I never was up to the place where you're supposed to, you know, and like Rabbi Bari pointed out to me, it's not Pasha that, you know, Pasha says you don't stop if you're not holding by the end of the bracha, because then you don't just blow a shofar in the middle of... In more recent years, I've been davening in minyanim that don't blow. But this is a big... Where did it come from? There's a lot of different explanations. The simple pshat that Achronim have is that there's an opinion of Rashi that whenever you say Malchus, Achronus, and Shofros, you have to blow the shofar too. That the brachas and the shofar are ma'akev one another. So not everyone had the minhag to have Malchus, Zichronus, and shofros in the Sa'ar L'Shmoneh Esrei. They only had it in the Chazaras HaShatz. So that's when they blew. But once they instituted the minhag to blow Malkiyah Zichronos and Shofar in the Sa'ar L'Shmoneh Esrei, so then they had to blow Shofar also. Because if you hold it to the Kiyas and Ma'akev, the Brachos, so then they had to do it as well. It's hard to know. The Rosh speaks from the Gaonim. You know, you look at the Rosh from the Gaonim, around that period. But there were, you know, there were a lot of opinions that were against it. The Magen Avraham was against blowing in the Shtil L'Shmoneh Esrei. The Avnei Nezer has a tshuva where there was a kehila that used to blow only in the Chazaras HaShatz, and then for the past recent years they started blowing in the silent, and now they want to go back to the original, and the kehila was divided, and they were waiting for the Avnei Nezer to give a psak, what he thinks is the proper way to do. And he said, you know, if you're really asking me, then I'll tell you. If you're not asking me, I won't get involved. If you're really asking me, I'll tell you. And he said that my opinion is no blowing in the Sa'ar L'Shmoneh Esrei. He was very forceful about that opinion, because the Shulta Gibborim says that you blow shofar in the Shmoneh Esrei b'tzibur. So the Sa'ar L'Shmoneh Esrei is yechidim. It's not really the full tzibur. The full tzibur is when everyone's doing it. One person is making a bracha for everybody. That's the tzibur. Okay. So what's the idea? Why is it that the Torah left out the word, the most basic word, in, if you would ask anyone, Rosh Hashanah, what would they say? Shofar. And that basic word, shofar, doesn't appear in the Chumash, in the context of Rosh Hashanah. So, there is a sefer, there was a Rav in Hungary, his name was Rav Mordechai Brisk, Maram Brisk, and he wrote drushes and other things. So he writes the following, he thinks it's very simple. He thinks the message of Rosh Hashanah is we're servants to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, you would think being a servant to a Kaddish Baruch Hu is confining. It's confining. Look, all the other people in the neighborhood here, they can eat in every eatery in this neighborhood or any place else, and we can only eat in very, you know, select places. And we can only do very, you know, select things, and we're very, very limited. So Rav Shachter pointed out, the Pasuk says, Ani Avdecha ben Amasecha, I'm an Eved Pitachta L'Moseirai. Now we're an Eved, and therefore our shackles are removed. So Rav Shachter pointed out, you would think just the opposite. If you're an Eved, you have shackles, not the shackles are removed. But the answer is, like Rav Shachter pointed out, is that you're an Eved Hashem, that's Cheres. And the idea being, as the Maram Brisk explained, because the Torah is the ultimate way of living a balanced life, a healthy life. You know, you have people who never take off. We have Shabbos. We have the Torah knows what the human body needs to live a balanced life. That's what the Meshech Chochmah explains. And therefore, living the mandates of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Torah is a very healthy, balanced existence. You have a person who's, you know, Obed Avodah Zarah, or he has other types of addictions and things like that, that's not Cheres, that's Avdus. That you can't get out of it. You can't get out of this addiction, that addiction. That's a tremendous Shibud. That's not Cheres. The Torah teaches us, you follow the Tzivur HaTorah, you Mekabel Ol Malchus Shamayim and Rosh Hashanah, that's the ultimate Cheres. So therefore, the mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah, says the Maram Brisk, is learnt out dafka from the shofar of redemption. The shofar that frees the avadim. Because to show us that when we're listening to the shofar of Rosh Hashanah, and we're mekabel all malchus shamayim from a Kodesh Baruch Hu, that is our ultimate freedom. That's not bondage, it's freedom.
I just read a study that mental illness is more prevalent among
So you're asking a question.
I'm asking a question. I mean, you stated that it's conducive to Torah Judaism, conducive to mental health.
Right. No, I don't think so. I mean, I don't know where you know, the study. I'm not a person who's into studies. I'm into, you know. Yeah. Look, there are people that have, you know, OCD and all these type of things, but a lot of people don't have proper guidance of how you're supposed to live a Torah life. You know, in other words, not everyone who's embarking on a Torah life knows what that means. So some people go overboard, and it's not healthy. Some people, they can daven very long Shmoneh Esreis, and then that's not necessarily a healthy thing. Because then you could, you could crack. You could, I've seen that. I've seen that in people, that they do too much, too quickly, too soon. And then, so you have to have, that's why you have to have a proper guidance of how one's supposed to, you can't just, live a Torah life based on what you think the Torah life is. That's why you have to have, Rabbi Willig once told me that Moshe Feinstein many years ago came to give a lecture here in Washington Heights to the Orthodox Jewish scientists. And one of the things he said, Rav Moshe, that Rabbi Willig said, is he explained the pasuk in Tehillim, Magid Devarav LeYakov Kuchov Mishpotov LeYisrael LoAsachem L'Cholay. We say this every day in Davin. So he said, Rav Moshe says, what does it mean, Magid Devarav LeYakov Kuchov LoAsachem? The Goyim don't have chukim? The Goyim have plenty of chukim. You go to a law school, they're full of law books. So what, we have laws, they don't have laws? Of course we have laws. So Rav Moshe said no. But the idea is that in Judaism, it's not enough to just, I happen to love libraries, I love, we have a beautiful library here. But if you don't have an oral transmission, a Magid Varvel Yaakov, a live role model to teach you how you're supposed to implement the halacha in real life. Not just you look in a book and say, oh, it says this, so this is what I'm supposed to do. But you don't know whether that applies to you and when it applies and how it applies. But Yiddishkeit is all based on what? Mesorah. Magid Varvel Yaakov. And that's part of shofar as well. Because shofar is also the shofar of Matan Torah. It's also the shofar of Matan Torah, and Matan Torah comes together with Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebal Peh. And Torah Shebal Peh means that we have to have a guide, a Rabbanim, people that we can relate to, who understand us and teach us how the Torah works in our lives, understands the particular person. What chumrah is not apropos for a person at this stage of his life, and even if you want to say these studies exist or whatever they are, but that doesn't mean that the Torah sometimes people don't know how the Torah relates to them and how to practically implement it in their lives. But if a person has the proper hadracha, so then we believe that the Torah is a Torah's Chaim. That's why, like the Gemara says, we're coming up to Sukkos as well. It's very unclear what is a pre-Eitz Hadar Kapos Tamara, the four species. So we know what it is. We go shopping every year, we know what it is. If you'd read it in the Chumash, you'd never figure it out on your own. But we have what the Rambam says, Perushim HaMukubalim. We have oral transmission. So the Gemara says like this. The Gemara is trying to figure out some of the species. What is a lulav? Is this, how do you know if this is a lulav, is not a lulav? So he says, maybe it's this, maybe it's that, maybe it's not a lulav, maybe it's not a... So the Gemara says about one of the species, maybe it's this particular thing, And the Gemara says it can't be that. You know why? Because that particular species is thorny. And it's not possible that the Torah is going to give us a mitzvah to take thorns in our hands and prick our hands. Because Drachea Dachei Noam. And therefore, the Gemara says it must be a different species. You can't say it's this particular species. Because the Torah, that's why the Meshech Chochmah has his famous comment that the mitzvah of Peru Revu is on the man and not the woman, because the woman has to suffer all the labor. So the Chiv wouldn't have been on her. The Chiv is on the man, because the mitzvahs of the Torah are mitzvahs that are supposed to give a person a balanced life. And that's why it's cheres, and that's why it's learned from shechur avadim, and the things that are not balanced are not healthy, and that's why people need to have rebbeim, because a lot of people, especially bali tshuva, because bali tshuva always want to overcompensate, right? They felt that they were lacking for so many years, and they want to overcompensate. So they overcompensate. They do too much, too soon, a lot of times. And then, that was the Ramah, who wrote the Perush on the Shulchan Aruch. He wrote a sefer called Mechir Yayin. Mechir Yayin is a sefer on Megillas Esther, written by the Ramah. And the sefer of Mechir Yayin, written by the Ramah, is more Kabbalistic Nister type of sefer. And he says, what does it mean, the pasuk Yasa Eitz Gavoa Chamishim Ama? So simple pshat means you make it a tree a certain height, and then they're going to hang Mordechai, and ultimately Haman was hung on it. So he says, but he thinks it means, besides the simple translation, that the Chamishim Ama represent the 50 levels of wisdom. He says, but whenever you climb up a tree of wisdom, you got to go step by step. Yasa Eitz Gavoa Chamishim Ama means I want Mordechai to go to the top in one step to bring his failure. Because anyone who does that, will ultimately fail, and that was his plan. And that's the idea of step by step, not going, too much at once. If you go too much at once, then you think you're living, you're doing the Torah way of living, and you're really being harmful to yourself. That's what the Rosh Yeshiva Karabiyan used to say, that the Mizbeach had a ramp. It wasn't steps, it was a ramp. And a ramp, when you throw a ball up a ramp, it's either going up or going down. So you have to take, step by step. You can't do everything. Lo sala b'malos, that's the Toldos Yaakov Yosef, really says this idea. But if you take big steps at once, that'll only cause you failure. So that's the idea of Rosh Hashanah, is the recreation of man. Vayipach ba'apav. That every year we're recreating our lives, and we're seeing what we were lacking in the past of our potential, and what we could continue to relive life in a Torah-dicka way, but in a wholesome way. And that's why this is compared, the word shofar doesn't appear in the Torah. Because you have to always realize that the shofar of Rosh Hashanah is the same shofar of Yom Kippur Shal Yovel that brings cheres. That brings cheres in your life. Because a lot of things, the Maral says the same thing by matzah. He says matzah is cheres. Why is it cheres? It's just flour and water. Why is that cheres? I would think that's poor poverty. He says, why it's cheres? Because anytime you have to rely on something. in life. So then you're meshuba to that particular thing. If you have to put additives, you have to put yeast, and you have to put... So then you're meshuba to that. Flour and water means I'm not meshuba to anything else. I don't need anything. I'm able to live a wholesome life without all the outside things in this world that people become attached to and sometimes addicted to, and that becomes a greatest obvious. And that's why Rosh Hashanah is cheres, just like Pesach is cheres. And that's why Pesach, we have the simple food. Now today everything is kosher for Pesach. You can find a derivative of every type of thing. You know, people you would think can go a week without, but you know, somehow. But the way Pesach is supposed to be, is not supposed to mean that every particular food we can have on Pesach also. No, it's to show that we can divorce ourselves from these things because we're not meshuba to them. We're not meshuba to them. We could have a healthy life without that, and that's the and that's why, you know, the Spinker Rebbe says the following, that we learn out how to, so how do we learn out shofar in the end of the day? From a gezeirah shava, b'chodesh hashvi'i, b'chodesh hashvi'i. It says b'chodesh hashvi'i by Yom Kippur shel Yovel, and b'chodesh hashvi'i by what? By Rosh Hashanah. And we know, so we explain this whole idea of the shofar from there, but there's another point that he says, and that is that the Maggid of Mezrich says that we know there are 13 principles that the Torah addresses them. If you come early enough to shul, you could say Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Shmuel Shesarei Midrash, the Torah addresses them. And that, it says in the Maggid of Mezrich, is what? Is parallel to what? The 13 midos harachamim. Say this, 13 midos harachamim. Now there's a big question how you count the 13 midos. That's, slichus is all about the 13 midos harachamim. That's what slichus is constantly going back to kel yoshamok. You see rachamim, we say the 13 midos harachamim. He says, the 13 midos harachamim is a big question how you count them. Is Hashem, is that counted? Where you only count Kel is number one. So the Arizal says Kel is number one. And Rachum is number two. Chanun is number three. Hashem is just introductory. So he says, the Maggid of Mezrich, that the 13 Midas HaTorah the Drashas Bahem are parallel to the 13 Midas HaRachamim. How do we know that? He says, very simple. When Moshe Rabbeinu davened for his sister in Parshas Baalosko, what did he daven? What was the tefillah? Kel na refon ala. And what was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's response? The paradigm kal v'chomer in Chumash. Vavia yorok yorok v'farelu tikon kishumas kal v'chomer l'shchina l'el shimudin. The parallel kal v'chomer in Shas is what Hashem said. Because Hashem is saying, you want to be ma'orer what? The mida of Kel? Then what do you do? You darshan the first mida of Kal v'chomer. So says the Spinker Rebbe the same thing. What does Chazal say when HaKadosh Baruch Hu blows, when we blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets up from the Kisei Hadin and he goes what? To the Kisei HaRachamim. How so? Because what is the shofar? Which means the shofar? You say Roshava. Is parallel to what? What Kel? Rachel. You say Roshava is the second Midah of Torah Shabbat Roshavim. So it's the second Midah of Rachamim. Kavachomer, Zer Roshava. So you want to be Ma'orah, the Midah of Rachum, so you darshan a Zer Roshava. And that's the idea. Another idea of Torah Shebaal Peh, because Torah Shebaal Peh is the midah that brings rachamim, brings rachamim in the world. You know, and all this leads up to Sukkot. The Sukkot is the ultimate yontif of Torah Shabbal Peh. Nisach HaMayim is all Torah Shabbal Peh. Right? We learn out from extra mem, extra yud, extra mem, but it's not the feirish like Nisach HaYayin. It says it many times in the Torah about the Yayin, but the Mayim, it's not the feirish. It's not the feirish. That's why there's a very interesting idea. The Gemara says in Vaisheni, not all the Kohanim Gedolim were great tzaddikim. Some of them were non-believers in Torah Shabbal Peh. So one of them, the Gemara says, what? Took the water, they threw it on the ground to make fun of the what? Right, to make fun of this mitzvah because it's not in Torah Shebichsav. So what did the people all do to him? They threw etrogim at him. So I would think, you know, if you have to throw somebody, of my dalminim, you know, barring the cost of the dalminim, I mean, the etrog is the best thing to throw. But Rabbi Reichel quotes from Rav Soloveitchik, another idea. He says, you're making fun of Torah Shabbal Peh with the water, the Nisach HaMayim. So then how do you know that this is the Pri Eitz Hadar? It's also only from Torah Shabbal Peh. Because we don't know, it's only because we have a Mesorah what the Pri Eitz Hadar is. So we're taking the Esrog and like in your face. So, you know, you're making fun of the tradition, so then who says that this is what we're supposed to be taking? Elulat, we have a Mesorah. So just like we have a Mesorah on the Torah Shabbal Peh, that this is an Esrog, we have a Mesorah that this is the water we're supposed to pour on the Mizbeach. And I'll conclude with the following. What's the idea of water on Sukkot? So I remember my oldest son, Baruch Hashem, was born on Chol HaMoed Sukkot. So I was in the Beth Israel Hospital eating lunch in the Sukkah there. And there was a Hasidic Shefela who was also eating there. So he said to me, so he started talking to me. He said, what's the idea of the water on Sukkot? So he told me over from his Rebbe, the late Rav Moshe David Steinwurzel, who was the Baba of the Rosh Hashiva. So he said, very simple. If somebody comes to your house, he's a guest. So you want to impress him, so you take out some nice food, some, you know, because, you know, you're not going to just take something that, you know, you have to make an impression. He's your guest. But if my best friend comes to my house, I don't have to make any impressions. We're like buddies. You know, I can give him water, and he'll be, you know, to show that, you know, we have this close relationship. I don't have to, you know, I don't need to impress you because you're my friend. We're best friends. So that's the madriga that we yearn on Sukkot. And we're mamish close to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Sukkot is the ultimate after Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Sukkot, the Shem Yishmuel says, Kadosh Baruch Hu invites us into his house. That's the Sukkah. Heviani Hamelach Hadarav. We give water on the Mizbeach because water is the most pashut thing. But you can do that to your closest friend because you don't need. And now we have that relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. So Be'ez Hashem, as we start now the Yom Noraim, and we go from Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot in this progression, so we should realize that this is the ultimate cheiros in the world, that be able to be mekabel ol malchus shamayim, and to realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is what? Is mashkiach on us. Is hashkocha pratis. Somebody told me, Rabbi Savitsky, I just met him in the library, he told me that the Rogachover says that when we say Zachreinu Latova B'yom HaZikaron HaZeh, so that's on the whole world. Zachreinu Latova. But Kasveinu, what's the significance of Ksiva? I mean, it's not like HaKadosh Baruch Hu really writes. So what is Kasveinu? So Rav Savitsky said to me from the Rogachover, Kasveinu l'chaim tovim, that's Hashkocha Pratis. In other words, in the whole world, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, as the Rambam says, the bigger tzaddikim have more Hashkocha, and Klal Yisrael has more Hashkocha, and Eretz Yisrael has more Hashkocha. Kasveinu l'chaim tovim, is that we believe that the tzaddik, or a person yearning to be a tzaddik, he has that higher level of a hashkacha, the Rambam says, of a hashkacha pratis, and that's what ksiv is about. Ksiv is you write it down because you're making special note, special attention to this particular thing. And that's what we want. We want it to, and if we realize that Kadosh Baruch Hu has hashkacha, then there's nothing to worry about, because anything that's going around in our lives, Hakadosh Baruch Hu is looking in a very specific way, and he knows. It's not like he's just leaving us to the hefker and to whatever happens. Kasveinu, says the Ragat Shavar, l'chaim tovim, is that hashkacha pratis, that Hakadosh Baruch Hu cares about every aspect of our lives. And then we feel so close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then we can go to Sukkot and have that beautiful relationship, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu cares about me so much, where we go into his house, into the Sukkot, we have the water, etc. And that's the ultimate of the Yom Noraim. So this is like a wonderful opportunity to get close to the Ribono Shel Olam. So I wish everyone a Ksiva Chasima Tova. It should be a year of good health, prosperity, hachovas hadas, nachas for all the people here and all of Klal Yisrael, and Shnas Chaim Bracha V'Sholom, Haksiva V'Chasima Tova Lanu U'L'Chol Beis Yisrael.